Tonight is September 10th, and tonight we're doing Lecture 1 of Enlightenment and Illumination. Because we lost the first three. I don't know where they are right now. Sometimes they get lost in the digital world. So to introduce you to this course, and of course I know the course very well because I did all the 12 lectures except for the first three. The first three are in my memory somewhere. So welcome to our first lecture in the series Enlightenment and Illumination. This particular series is inspired to bring forth to you some of the information, some updates of our history. And especially that history that deals with the spiritual. Many of you can relate to our form of spirituality. This spirituality is about taking a spirit into your soul. So when you take an emotion into yourself, for instance, it can affect you. When you take a thought into you, it can affect you. So when you take in this particular spirituality, and somebody says to you, for instance, well, what kind of spirituality is it? And they try to identify with it, with something in the past. Is that right? Yeah. But it's not anything in the past. Anybody that's familiar with my lectures realizes that there's nothing like these lectures. This is pure spirituality. And the evidence is that you can't find this kind of spirituality in any other lectures anywhere. The kind of information that we get, the kind of form of the inspiration, the kind of information that we do get is inspirational. It comes as an inspiration of the spirit. So when you follow along in our lectures, if this is the first time you've heard my lectures, you'll realize that these are direct inspirations. And also you feel a little excitement inside yourself too, because you think to yourself, I do that. Yeah, I do that. I'm not talking about me. Of course I do that. But I'm talking about your own thoughts inside of you. You say to yourself, at times, this happens to me. So what we're really showing you here is a concentrated form of inspiration. And then in your day, throughout the day, you get these little sprinkles, raindrops, so to speak, where the inspiration occurs. Now, what's important in a spiritual school such as ours, and especially a teaching and a technique that I can give to you, it is really this, is that you are called upon to go out and collect those inspirations. Now, me as a teacher, I go out into the world and I see people, and they are like people that don't have the technology to save the inspirations. They don't know what to do with them. They don't know how to apply them. And so learning how to apply them is essential. And of course, when people ask me, what do you do in your school? It's hard for me to explain to them that I teach people how to work with inspiration. They assume that it's just to give it out. But really, it's also about nurturing our inspiration. So as you listen in our course, you learn the techniques of great artists. Because inspiration is something that lives in artists. Now, why? It's because that's where the spirit lives in humanity. Spirit lives in things like music and poetry. And so you are going to find inspired works with poets, with actors, with people that live in the thought realm of consciousness. Now, consciousness is a funny word, isn't it? It's really not correct. Consciousness doesn't really tell us anything. When we think of knowledge or knowing, we really have something there. But when we think of illumination, there we really have it. So I'm going to tell you, inspiration is really to live in the light. You see that? It's not consciousness anymore. Consciousness is like ringing a doorbell or something. It's something where you feel that there's a calling, something that tells you, look at this. But in inspiration, it's a realm. In inspiration, it's a realm of invitation. It's an invitation to a realm, or it's an invitation to a place, or it's an invitation to look at something. Inspiration is also a message, like as if you have a... Inspiration is a form of a companionship. There we have it, right there. Inspiration is to walk with the gods, my friends. Inspiration is to listen to a spirit talking to you. That's what it is. And people have to go out and prove these things, then what happens? What are they proving? If I have to go out and prove that the wind or the rain or the fire or the earth is something, well, that's only the beginning of the story, isn't it? How many different ways can we understand water? How many different ways can we understand fire? Fire is not just something that sits on the end of a candlestick. Fire has also the properties of electricity. Fire has this amazing will in it. When we begin to unfold fire in the external world, can be a perilous thing, can't it? It can also be the fertility of a crop for the next year, for it depends on the burning of the fields. For some cultures, to burn the fields and then to plant the seeds is essential, as for others, to plow it. What is it that is occurring in these ancient processes? These ancient practices, something really amazing, and that's the carbon, the carbonization of the plants. And when water mixes with that carbon, under special circumstances, when water mixes with it, it makes it to concentrate and join with things. And then soon enough, after a time, and this is the amazing thing, if the sun beats down upon that carbon that is joined with special elements that nature provides, there is something of a very, very interesting miracle. And that is water's created. Yes, my friends. On fields where carbon, where things are carbonated and burnt in that way, if the field in one of the years following has a great downpouring of sun and heats up that carbon, if it's worked its way to a certain chemical compound, the sunlight will create water out of that carbon. The carbon will begin to weep. It's an interesting thing, isn't it, to think this carbon starts to weep. And by weeping, it makes water in the fields. This is something that an ancient man could experience just in the way we're telling you. That's what inspiration, that's the path of inspiration, that's what inspiration, that's why the path of inspiration is such a beautiful path for us. If I were to tell you with a chemical formula how this is, you wouldn't understand the weeping. You wouldn't see a field feeling. You wouldn't see a man feeling for his field. You wouldn't see that the mineral was weeping. Now, my friends, if your soul is weeping, and then you begin to weep as nature weeps and cries, and you think to yourself, why is nature crying? Why is she crying out there? You see? It's a deep feeling that we can have inside of us, isn't it? So when men don't want to think and feel, they want to think first and then decide whether they're going to feel at all. This is the normal processes This is a human process. This is the same as a chemical process. It's the same as setting things up in manufacturing. It's the same kind of thing where we set it up to go in succession. But that doesn't mean that that is exactly how the successions are supposed to go. That's just the order of the present day. If you decide I'm going to avoid that thinking process, you're going to go right to the feeling process. And then there's going to be a pure feeling. If you use the thinking process to get to the pure feeling, then the thinking will be in service of life, feeling life. You might ask, well, gee, that's really good, isn't it? I really like that. I would really like to have that. Well, that's right. That's exactly what made mankind, set mankind on the path to find his clear thinking in the present day. But also, there is the other process, the first one that I spoke of, and that's that process where the thinking stops before the feeling. It decides whether it's going to feel. Now, this is an important thing in one sense. Everyone is free to do their processes, but also it is important to know what we do in our processing, how we set things up to go a certain way. So I want to give you some versatility here, give you the option of reorganizing the steps in how you think things out. Now I want you to feel. These are steps that I'm taking. I want you to feel your body going into a world of thought. That's right. Because you're going into the feeling nature of the beings around you. The beings of the world feel. Now, you think and move. The beings of the spirits of nature feel and move. That's what wind tells you. This is an intuition. You'll get an intuition of how the spiritual beings are organized in this way. You'll get a feeling of how the spiritual beings move through nature or are moved in nature by feeling. You'll be able to see what is essential as the essential life of a human being upon the earth too, if you can feel how he breathes or is breathed upwards into the realms of the spiritual beings by his feeling life. Why is it? Because there's an essence in nature. There is a power in nature that needs to work the carbon. The carbon itself is something that's attracted to the mysterious processes of nature. Science leaves us with just a little hint of it. And that hint is enough if we can follow it. And it's called the footprint of carbon. Carbon is the very character. It is the character, the player, the role in the cosmic world of recording. It joins and bonds with different elements and gives over to them the feeling or the impressions. So feeling and impressions have something to do with each other, don't they? So when you think of the world, you're going to spread yourself into a certain picture form. If you slowed that whole process down, if you slowed it down, you'd come to your feelings. So if you evolve it in a feeling way, if you feel it a little more than you do just to think it, if you begin to feel it, you'll see that your feeling life is an emanating of your soul life. So what is it that is emanating from you to give yourself this feeling? And you will come eventually to the powers and forces of carbon. Carbon is giving you that. But it's not just carbon alone. Carbon needs the substances to draw upon it, to suck into it. To suck things out of it, you might say. To use it. So we think of this as fire. Fire and the substances which are prepared in such a way that they join with the carbons. So as you go through the chemical world, you're going to see these special formings of salt and the special form of oil. The way oil works, fragrancing, the fruits of the world. So when we are able to establish for ourselves an understanding of alchemy, it's going to come through our feeling life. And people will say, well, how can you do that? I would rather think about things. Thinking is the way of modern man. But the path to understand the spirit of nature, this path to understand or penetrate into the spiritual nature, is going to give us insights into the spirituality of nature as well. We have to understand what it is that is driving or feeling or giving direction to the spirits of nature. For human beings, it seems to be somewhat of an affair of themselves. They feel that they're pretty separate from the will of nature. And that is, above all things, true. Until we begin to take the veils off of nature, and then we realize that there is a deep connection between the spirituality of nature and human beings. And what is it that we're really looking at when we think of as nature? And we're really only seeing the veils of things. Mankind is surrounded completely in his sense organization with a picture of nature. And that's it. It's just a picture. He's really surprised if he can understand beyond the picture. So it's better not to think about it, my friends, isn't it? It's a very safe world if you don't think about it. People that have inspiration, like artists and poets, like we were talking about, people that live in that realm, they're also subject to the spirit, the movement of the spirit, the movement of the heart, the soul, the mind, the consciousness. Well, that's going to interfere with our work, unless you're a theater person, unless you have a profession out there in the world that allows you to spread or pour this forth. But if you try to pour forth your artistic character in people that are of a practical bent of the world, they get very angry. They have this idea that that person is likable or dislikable, just like we like some character in a movie. When you treat an artist as an artist, when the artist wants to be treated as a human being, we rob the human being of his human nature. We force him to become a subject of the picture, the subject of the world as a puppet. Because the artist is really taking within themselves the spirit. So to appreciate that the inspired content is coming through the artist, it has to flow through, it has to come through, and sometimes, or often it is, that people don't realize that behind that artist is a real person with heart and soul and feelings. And so for a human being, that interrelationship, for human beings, this interrelationship between the artist and the normal run of humanity is something similar to the separation between human beings and the spirit of nature, or the spirituality of nature, or the spirit in general. They really are pretty much the same. So the artist represents, in more or less a living way, something that in nature is spread out over the whole of it. So we go and we look at the mountains and we look at the ocean and we just see a picture there. But we don't really feel yet what it is that's weeping in nature. We don't feel what is weeping in the whales or the sea lions. We don't feel what's weeping in the forests of the sequoias or the redwoods. We don't feel the weeping of the fields of the almonds, or the weeping natures and the bees. We don't feel the sorrows of nature. We just see something to use often. And if we're going to understand the spirit of nature, we think we supply her with something just by pouring out of ourselves some thoughts at it and saying, that's good enough. Here, you take some of my thoughts. But the poet, he goes out and sits there and he begins to feel it. He says, well, this is what the spirit wants to say. And the spirit can be very surprising. It can be very humorous, too. The spirit is a full and rich thing. So not only is the nature of one kind of weeping, but it's also a kind where she begins to reflect, as an artist reflects, our own being. She reflects what we need. She reflects also what we lack and her feelings towards it. So the artist begins to embrace this beautiful soul that speaks with a depth of wisdom. But before we come to this, before we come to this depth of wisdom, there's all kinds of things that we meet on the way. And so we want to see what those are. We want to understand what that is. And in our modern age, as accessible as these realms are and these pathways are, we have to still point out that it took a lot of work for human beings to be able to see exactly into the realms of the spirit as we're talking about. An artistic eye, a forming of a human soul into the art of the beautiful of nature is not just what we're talking about. We're talking about the expression of wisdom as well. The greater mind, the higher mind. But that doesn't exclude the fact that there are haunting demons in nature, that there are terrible tempests, there are horrific spiritual winds, and there are haunting fires of passion. Terrible, haunting fires of tremendous will that consume the soul, the nature, the eyes, the being. What an unprotected human soul experiences going into those realms is almost indescribable. When we think of Odysseus going into the realms of the spirit, he had to be tied to his mast. He told his men to tie him to his mast, and he had his men stuff their ears with cotton, with wax and cotton, so they couldn't hear voices of the spirit, the haunting voices, the alluring voices that would lure the men into the realms of the spirit. And so for all of you that live in an intellectual world, one thing can be said about it. It is very free. It's very easy. It doesn't have the emotional content. And it does not really have the self of a human being or the selves of others. It is pictures. It is the exact thing that allows a scientist to understand nature. He can go into nature without feeling, and he can look at the mating, the fertility of creatures. He can understand the colors of the gemstones. He can begin to understand what it is that makes the flowers in the fields and how they work, the bees and what drives them, or all the other insects. When he comes to the human soul, if he uses his intellect, a modern human uses their intellect, they drive out of that conscious perception. They drive out of that conscious perception everything we're talking about when it comes to the art of the soul. It's not there. The world is really rather silent. And so what, on the one hand, is in the realm of nature as a picture. Also, the soul reveals itself to be an external thing too, to itself. So it is something you can say, I take it or leave it, if I like to. And when you come to the females in nature, of course, this is where things begin to go astray. Females can't carry this portion into their consciousness with the same vigor. They're not so passive towards it. In fact, they are very aggressive to find out what is the reason for their feelings. Why do they have these inspired thoughts? The problem with the female is she doesn't know what to do with her inspirations until her family or consciousness forms and she begins to apply herself there. But she can use it for cleverness. She can use it to entrap and ensnare a mate. And that's perfectly justified in the realms of nature, my friends. She sees herself as a creature of nature, something that males in their intellectual way would never even conceive of. In fact, that's why males are so in the dark about the female nature. Because it is actually the inspired content of nature in activity. Nobody can even get to it. Psychologists can't even touch it. That which we call psychology today is all applied to males. Females have nothing to do with that psychology. There's nothing that can be applied to a female that is in modern psychology. Has anybody noticed that? You can read all the psychology books you want, but it doesn't have to do with the female. The female reads the psychology books as an instruction book for males or children, but not for themselves. It's an interesting point of fact, isn't it? That's a mystery, isn't it? It shows you right there what is mysterious in our world. It's because there in the female soul is the power of nature working, the spirit of nature. Spirit is not a psychology. In order to be a science of a psychology, it has to be a picture, because you're going to take the pictures and put them down in stages. You're going to say, for instance, here's a seed, now here's a stem, here's a leaf, and here's a flower. Everything in the female nature has nothing of that. It's all inspiration. She waits for words to come to her, and then she speaks. She waits for things to happen, and then she makes comments. If she makes things happen, it's for other things or other people or events in time. But she doesn't invent for herself and out of herself. Something else enters into her and she supports it. That's inspiration. And the inspiration is of a very powerful nature. So it need not be expressed in the sense of something unusual. It's like a beam of light. One sits under it, or one shades oneself from it. One utilizes it. But to know what that particular light is, it's really quite a mystery, isn't it? Whereas a male, you can trace the spiritual in the male. You can say, he's been affected by this thing here. He's been affected by Theodore Roosevelt. See, look at him ride his horse. This male here, he's been affected by a country singer. Look at that. Oh, yeah. Here he is singing the songs about Bakersfield. See? He's a gold miner. He's a coyote man. See, the male spirit is very, very, very visible. The female, it goes off and trails off into an unknown mystery. And it's very, very, very clear, too, that what emanates out of that mystery is not vague. It's very clear to the female underneath the light of it and in involved in its inspiration. In fact, for her, you could say it becomes a beautiful voice of the spirit. That's right, my friends. A beautiful voice of the spirit. If she had to express herself as a male in the world, people would say she's a heretic. People would say she's a renegade against all that which is in the books. And that's why females feel very uncomfortable when their natures are very developed and people begin to pry them apart. But they're very adept at avoiding being pried apart, you might say. They're very adept at it. Whereas a male, if you look at it, how it goes in the world, you look at the social pathway, people question and question and question the male because they're going to come to an answer, a definitive. And they expect it. Without a definitive in the nature of a male, they think there's something wrong with the male. They think he's inadequate. With a female, it's nothing. I want to point these things out for you so that you realize or you understand what it is that is overbalanced in our world as far as intellectuality. The passive nature of the male, the aggressive or the positive nature of the female, that positive flowing nature of the female is attached to the spirituality of nature. The passive spirituality of the male is also attached to nature. That passive spirituality is attached to the picture consciousness or the picture forms of nature. The artistic inspired content is still lacking there. And also that which the inspirational can build up into itself in an imaginative way. To ask questions, to push oneself to say, I want to know about things. This is to go against the passive nature. It's to be able to take on the nature of the feminine in oneself. That's what we're talking about when we say to reverse the polarity. The male is a passive or negative nature in his etheric nature. So he's passive to that spirituality. Just pointing these out so you know this is important for us, because to create these crystal clear concepts as a foundation for us is very important. Without this understanding, we couldn't understand the science of it. So we've made these into pictures for you and concepts so that you can step across these forces. You have a foothold as you go across this more or less treacherous river of emotions and thoughts and feelings and all that, which is the elemental world. But here you've constructed a technique. And in constructing these techniques for you, that allows you to understand when something is going against this nature. Something is out of place. We need to understand this, and we're going to understand that This is a harmful thing. If you can use these techniques, then it will protect you from a lot of the powers and forces of the elemental worlds. What these elemental worlds are is the footprints of the gods. The carbon that's in nature is not only mankind's. It's the carbon of the predecessors of humanity, the ancestors. And these ancestors included higher spiritual beings in ancient times. What that means is that the gods are watching humanity. When you pick up the fruits of the world, think of it, the gods have made or placed the fruits in the trees. They have created the conditions to put those fruits there. Now, when you take into yourself those fruits as carbon, as fruit, and then reduce it to the light and then the carbon, and it enters your soul nature, if you live in your intellect, you're just going to see it as sugar and protein and some water and carbohydrates and things like that and some fiber. That's all you can do with that. But that's good enough for a scientist. And it's good enough for the FDA or somebody else like that who puts it on a label of a thing. But if you're of a sensitive nature, if you're of a higher sensitive nature, what that means is you can go further, and you should go further. You can take it further. You can follow that spirituality of that carbon, and it is in your breath, in your breathing in and out with the cosmic worlds, the soul nature of the spiritual beings and the soul nature of the human being begin to interact. And if you want to know, then you're going to send something out into that substance which answers our question today. How does mankind, or why does mankind have to deal with the spirit? It's because of the will nature in the soul. If you want to know something, and you really need to know it, you have a will to know it. You have a will out of your karma to know things because you've been affected by things. Your intellect can take you through the world only so long. Then things begin to happen. You become sick. You lose a girlfriend. You have a birth in the family. Death. Any of these things that are related to the female, for instance, mostly, and you can understand why it's related to the female, there is the fruit. It's important to understand that that fruit grows because of the conditions around that female and what that nature is inside of her. Now, these are mysteries, my friends. They're not something so easy to understand, because you can look at the trees of nature and you can see. Then you take that as inspiration into your world, and it takes a night and a day. It takes your dreaming self and a day to illumine what you've dreamed about, to understand it. As an inspired poet, I can tell you, you can ask the question. You can go through the world. You can see the things. You can say, okay, nature has put the tree there. There's the fruit. Then all the way up to the nature of the female within the human life wave. And then when you breathe that into yourself as imagination and say, out of your karma, there are questions I need to answer here. Namely, the questions in line with what we just talked about. Birth, and death, marriage, illness. See? And what does it have to do with the creation of the substances? Well, for a male, it's not the same as it is for a female. So the substance that's created there, then when it fruits, and then when it dies, and then when it is tended or cared for in its death. What happens with our tomatoes, our grapes, our figs, walnuts and almonds? They go down different channels. They're produced in different ways. Some become wine, some become cheese, some things become fruits on the table, some things are converted into other forms with fermentation. But when things rot, what happens? Fruits can be very nice for a few days, and if you let them rot, they're a pile of stink. Not so nice and tasty anymore. So aside from the things of the beauty, aside from these things that lead us to the great productions of the world, we also have that side of nature where things are tremendously the opposite, are really in the opposite direction. Things that are repulsive. So we have to understand that the most repulsive aspects of human nature are also going to be found in the feminine life wave, in as far as fruit of the soul. So my friends, these are things that we have to understand are emanating out into nature. Just like if we have a rotten banana, its emanation is what we're really worried about. Because when you come into a room and this stinky thing is emanating out, it fills the whole room with something really awful, doesn't it? An odor. So I want to point these things out to you so that you get some imagination and get some feeling and some alchemy. This is real alchemy, my friends. Real alchemy comes to us, to our aid, to tell us something about the invisible. So this course is about understanding what it is in nature that scares us. What drives us out of nature drives us back into ourselves and says to you or me, you can't go out into this nature, you need to be intellectual. You need to be a thinking being, a logical being. And this is why people avoid the path of spirituality and for so long too. But there is also the way of understanding the soul of, as we've just showed you, that when the soul in an invisible way begins to go bad, we don't see it, we don't smell it, but it goes bad. People don't know what to do. So the intellect in itself is perfect. It works perfect, but not everybody is living in that soul nature, nor can function that way. And the intellect is only good up until the point where we begin to break down. That's the fact, my friends. And that's what philosophers have said for ages and ages and ages. So it's only prudent to realize that there is a short span of life where the beauty and happiness is all balanced and everything is just fine and life is just great. But if a person doesn't put the strength, the courage, the wisdom, if he doesn't take attention to strength and courage and wisdom and all the virtues and listening to the wise human beings of this earth, then he hits a catastrophe head on and breaks down so easily and begins to weep, becomes a crybaby for the littlest thing. A girl leaves him and he cries and he can't stand it. Why? The depth of it is too deep to go into here. And how many of you, of our students, and how many people in the world suddenly, with their high and mighty thoughts, suddenly realize that they don't have any thoughts to deal with their out-of-control emotions? Their out-of-control feelings. Suddenly they begin to feel. As in the movie of Grinch. And who was the guy that played Grinch?
Jim Carrey.
When Jim Carrey as the Grinch said, I'm leaking. He thought the tears were leaking out of him. You know, the Grinch that stole Christmas. See? Because when people can't feel and they're cruel, when they're cruel, it's the females that feel it the most because they are in service to a male who is cruel, and the male who loves them is really loving them to make cruelty. He's saying, come over here, I'm cruel, but come over here, I'm going to tell you I love you, but I'm still cruel. And suddenly the female says, I can't stand this anymore because I can't feel. My substance is becoming corrupted. So that's when males come into confrontation with the nature that's invisible in the soul. if you just understand that little bit, then you'll be able to understand a lot that's hidden in the world, my friends. A lot. You'll begin to take the little tiny corner of the veil off to see deep into the mysteries. Into the mysteries. Because the effect of the male is so deep upon the female that it probably is the whole of the beautiful spiritual worlds that unfolds for that male at death. That he gets to go into that realm because of the interactions that he's had with different females. Now, if the females have spread or emanated out a beautiful thing, that's a good thing, isn't it? Or if they spread out a certain type of discipline, when does that become active? It's not just the coming and going of the lovers. It's also when the spiritual world prepares itself to deliver karma, to deliver the conditions and the environments and the atmospheres of which karma, in which karma plays itself out. We don't see that in nature, do we? We see clouds and beautiful sunshine no matter what happens, or rain, or even tornadoes and great thunderstorms or great hurricanes, as we have now, Hurricane Irma. 170-mile-per-hour winds. Amazing things. But nobody can relate that to their own soul life. That's because nature has her way. We pay attention to nature as we do another person or persons. It's a community, my friends. And human beings have a community. Now, look at the community of human beings now. Look at the spiritual community of human beings upon the earth. And then you begin to understand what it is when the poets, the religious poets, the artist poets, begin to talk about angels and archangels and what they really are. How they're related over here to the feminine and the higher form of the feminine. That's right. Why? Because they have to tend the substances to keep them pure and prepare them so that they can be fertilized. Think of it, what happens then when the females have children. It's not all the children that get selected. Not all the seeds that germinate are worthy of being collected into the higher forms of fertility. How many of you have looked at the great seeds and said, here, how many of you have looked at your pumpkin seeds or your other fruits and said, this one tastes great, I want to get the seeds from that one? Well, that's what deals with the male nature, the selective form of the male. So when the male is of a certain selective power, when he has developed a certain individuality, then he stands out there and people say, there, this is a good seed. Amongst all the seeds of the world. It is up to you, my friends. It is up to you as representatives of the form of art of creation to take yourself to as high a level of perfection as you can. And so that's what enlightenment and illumination really is all about. To become involved in what it is that's great in a human being is not just to say pretty words and seduce people. Because pretty words are just as much a seduction as they are of a beautiful nature. It's only when they lead to something beautiful that they're good, because seduction, words of love, also can lead to corruption. Do you understand that? So if you're just involved in being a good person, you also could be leading people down the paths of perdition. One has to know the difference. So when we think of what it is that is enlightenment and illumination, it is to set ourselves on the highest and most noblest path of our spirituality that we can understand. at every moment we can fill ourselves up with more and more of enlightenment and illumination, as much as our souls can get. We are never tired of it. We are never tired of a greater thing. We are never tired. We never become tired of developing in ever greater ways. It is the commitment of the human being to the service of his spiritual nature that we're speaking of when we say we are on the path to discover the human soul. We are on the path to discover what it is that breaks the human being down, that tires him down, makes him irritable, that prevents him from finding that power in him that gives him goodness, truth, and beauty all in one. That takes enlightenment, my friends. It takes illumination to find it. It takes an illumination of the path through the treacherous forms of the spirit that people are so scared of. So when people are going to move from the intellectual into the realms of nature and to participate with the spirituality of nature, they're going to need enlightenment and illumination for sure. So we're going to show you this in these 12 lectures. And thank you tonight for listening to our first lecture in our series, Enlightenment and Illumination of the Soul.